Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
This is the BBC.
Hiya, thanks for downloading the show. My name is Susan Kalman. I'm a comedian and this is my podcast, Mrs. Brightside, a cheerful take on depression. Yes, comedy and depression. Bit of a weird one, isn't it? The thing is, I like to make misery funny and I think other people feel the same way. And I wanted to make this podcast because I think we should all talk more about our mental health and remove some of the stigma surrounding it. I've invited 8 amusing people into a basement in Soho to bare their souls to me. I didn't have any questions. It's not a traditional interview. I just wanted to chat to them about what they thought about their own heads. There's no parameters, there's no definitions. It's just coming from them and me. In this episode, I talked to comedian Jesse Cave.
Why aren't you in therapy?
Exactly.
Have you been in therapy?
Well, the problem is I feel like it's dating. I don't have time to date therapists because isn't it like you find the right one? I don't have time to date and find a therapist. I have to choose one.
Now, I don't know Jesse, and there's something quite strange about inviting a stranger into a small, dark room to talk about their most intimate secrets, but we did it, and it's a really fascinating discussion of anxiety and what makes her tick. Thanks for doing this.
No, you're welcome. I'm very excited to talk about
depression and anxiety. Please introduce yourself to people who are listening to the podcast.
Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Jesse Cave. I don't know how to describe what I do for a living to anybody. I guess the main thing I do is illustrations, doodles about love. I do comedy and I also sometimes act in things, but that's very rare because no one wants to employ me. because I refuse to do any roles where I can't wear glasses or be myself, so because I can't act really. So I have quite a limited career.
I automatically like you almost more than anyone I've ever met. You've got an agent.
I do. This is another thing. I've been going for like 11 years and it's like one of the first thing people ask, like, do you have an agent? I'm like, yeah, I do.
I mean that my agent I love because she knows I won't do certain things.
Yeah.
And that is why I love her.
Yeah, I'm happy the same thing.
And I just meant because some people I know's agents aren't like that. I believe you have an agent. You're a very successful human being.
No, I'm really not.
It's more that if some people said to their agents, by the way, I don't really like doing the following, they'd say, well, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
And the fact that my agent doesn't, I love her for it.
I've only just got to the point of confidence where I've been able to say, I'm done with trying to fit myself into a mold. I'm just never going to fit. And I think comedy has just given me this new lease of being able to say no to things because I'm like, well, okay, I don't really mind if I'm not going to get an episode of whatever where I have a few lines where I have to not be myself and actually have quite a difficult time doing it because I find it so painful really to do because I'm awkward and I don't enjoy it. And comedy it's given me a way of making a little bit of a living by being able to be myself, and that's just, I feel so lucky to be able to do that. And I genuinely don't know what I would be doing if I didn't have that outlet now, because I do have this need to perform somehow, and I wasn't getting that as an actress, so I feel very lucky that I'm able to do a little bit of both.
I have depression and anxiety, and they vary. Sometimes I'm more anxious, sometimes I'm more depressed, but I'm blessed with having both of those particular mental health ailments. And comedy saved my life in a lot of ways, I think, because it allowed me to express myself
I felt very frustrated in my life before that. I have depression and anxiety. What are you bringing to the party, Jessie?
Well, I wouldn't say I have depression. I have extreme anxiety, and I have done since I was born. Very paranoid person, just again, since I was born. I fall into certain holes very often. And then I can come out of the hole and be fine for a while, and then I can fall back into one. It's all, for me, the cure is definitely is working and focusing more on myself and stopping being on Instagram. I can cure myself and heal myself sometimes, but when things are out of my control is just such a huge need for me. So I usually all my problems stem from lack of control over a situation. I feel very lucky. I have two babies with two small children. And since they were born, I've had to stop being so neurotic on a daily basis and have to kind of contain all my paranoia and jealousy and anxiety attacks into very small bursts because I don't want to inflict that on them. So that's been good. But I've gone through quite a difficult breakup. I'm in the midst of that. So I'm not mentally that great at the moment, but yes. I'm using the bad I'm aware of the holes.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Jessie, I'm not mentally in the best place either. So this podcast is going to be a stormer as two not very well people have a discussion about mental health.
Great.
Now, a couple of things that you said there really struck a chord. Control is a huge issue in my life. I feel happy if I'm in control. It manifests itself for me in almost minutiae. So, food. What am I eating? When am I eating? And if I can say to my wife, we're going to have lunch and we're going to have dinner and I know what we're having, I can relax for the rest of the day. One of the worst moments of my life on our honeymoon, we were in Venice and she said, should we just go for a walk and see what there is? And I became very upset because that's not, to me, that's horrible.
I completely relate to that.
You know, and because it's control makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a difficult thing. But I can become upset if I don't know what I'm eating.
Yeah. I have a similar thing with food like that too. Like I eat almost the same thing every single day. And it just is like, it works. I like it. Why do I need to change it? And when it's thrown, like gigging is difficult because like you don't eat. Where do you fit in your evening meal?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm gigging quite a lot, I always am like, I have to factor that in. I have to be prepared I have to prepare my mind to be like, right, you're not going to have dinner tonight, but it's okay. You can have it when you get home, or you can just have an earlier dinner. Mm-hmm. And just have to like counsel myself about lack of dinner. The control thing comes into play with me. In my relationship with the father of my children, I would want to control his life. I would micromanage his career or try to be his manager. Mm-hmm. I think that's my dream role in life, is to be my boyfriend's manager. And I thought I would be like the best manager. But he did not want a manager. He had a manager who was great. So I started realizing those problems, and that eventually did break us up. Navigating being broken up with children and the lack of control I have over what he's doing when he's not with us, while still being quite in love with him and heartbroken and not being able to know what he's doing with his free time. He hates me calling it free time. I always say, you can go and be free now. He hates it. So we decided to break up. It's not just me. But anyway, is the lack of knowing what he's doing in that time. So he was just at the Melbourne Comedy Festival for 5 weeks. And so I had them on my own. And I was great. I was very sane for 4 weeks. because he was communicating with me. And I just need a text saying, how was bedtime? And I'm fine, because I'm like, well, that shows he cares. He knows that it's actually quite difficult looking after two young children. You know, that's great. He's being present with us, even though he's on the other side of the world. But then in the last week, he went a bit AWOL. And I did have a full breakdown. I just needed a text to say, so basically I'll cut the long story short, but basically I got a paddling pool. It was a really hot day. And they were playing in the paddling pool, and it was like a really, it was a nice thing that I'd done. I got them a paddling pool. So I sent him a lovely photo of them in the paddling pool, and I waited for a response. Like, I just wanted, oh, that's really sweet. Where did you get the paddling pool from? That's all I needed. But I didn't get any response. So I sent like five more cute photos of them in the paddling pool. Didn't get any response. And this is day one of the breakdown. And basically day five of the breakdown was me just screaming by FaceTime, why didn't you ask where we got the paddling pool? The paddling pool was symbolized, you know, like, who was he with? What was he doing? Everything. But he just thought I was going mental over a paddling pool, but it wasn't about the paddling pool.
I have a huge amount of self-insight into my own anxiety and depression. It sometimes isn't helpful. Like, I know why I'm doing it.
Mm.
I absolutely know why I'm doing it. Like, you're saying the paddling pool is just kind of a metaphor. It's something you know.
Mm.
But that sometimes actually makes it worse.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you have a comprehension. It's like watching the start of an episode of Casualty.
Mm.
You know exactly what's about to happen.
Mm.
You can theorise, but you can't stop your mind from doing these things.
Yeah. And, usually if you have someone to talk to in real life, like a human right there, it usually isn't as bad. But when you're on your own and it's like with a phone or online or whatever, you suddenly just feel like you can go insane. So I do feel like I just have to try and monitor myself and not be alone. It isn't helpful. I know what I'm doing. But I only know what I'm doing kind of after making a lot of mistakes, the same mistakes of getting into these, like sending horrible, aggressive text messages, manipulative, and not being able to stop sending them because I'm so hurt. But the only way I can express that hurt is by being mean and controlling via text. Mm-hmm. So I only know after seeing the damage those downward spirals has caused, be able to now know the destruction and why I haven't been necessarily like healthy.
Yes.
I only know that now.
I want to explore the negative before we get onto the positive. So forgive me if I go into something else just now. I get the control. I mean, I control because I don't think anyone can do anything as well as I do.
Which, it's true.
Well, I think it's true.
Yeah.
And I have to consciously stop telling my wife what to do because she's older than me. She's lived a life before she met me and surprisingly functioned. Do you know what I mean? Her life didn't start when I met her.
Yeah.
She drove a car before I met her. She managed to live a life. And suddenly I come along as if she's the most stupid woman in the world. But it's because she does it wrong. Mm-hmm. She's accepted it now. Paranoia I also get. Not in terms of necessarily the relationship, but in terms of a wider life.
Mm.
Paranoia / jealousy is one of the most destructive emotions I think you can possibly feel. And it's a really difficult one to keep a hold of, isn't it?
Jealousy, thinking that I imagine whole stories and I play them out of my head. I convince myself that what I'm imagining is real. So it almost does become real because I'm living with it. So I don't know how to navigate that at all. I think it's difficult with things that aren't love based, but I think for the love side of paranoia and jealousy, I don't know how anyone is okay with. I'm not being very clear at all, but I get very jealous, I think is the bottom line.
Yes.
And I've never been a jealous person, so I don't know why it's suddenly come out. Don't know why.
But the thing is, I've had depression for as long as I can remember. And my anxiety has changed. It's quite a funny thing that the basis of my anxiety has changed. I'm much more anxious about dying. Things. I'm frightened of everything. I'm literally frightened. I travelled all over the world. I've done many magnificent things. And now I worry before I go on an escalator. And so for me, my anxiety has developed into just a fear of things. And lifts, and I wake up with panic attacks because I'm in a hotel and I don't know where I am. And I think it can develop. This is the thing. Our brain is a remarkable thing that can feed into itself, and our anxiety develops into something else. In terms of your comedy, though, as I say, I found comedy 2013. I did my first show that I actually enjoyed, about equal marriage.
I saw it. I loved it.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for that. But that was the first time I liked comedy, really, because I started talking about things that were important to me. In terms of comedy and expressing yourself, how has it helped you to do shows about you?
Oh, it's transformed my life. I've only started comedy after, it's kind of a transition from my doodles, which I started in 2011. I started doing a doodle a day on Twitter, and I started getting a following for them. But basically, I started doing them to try and get the attention of a guy that was rejecting me. And I thought, well, if I can do some funny doodles about love and relationships, maybe he'll think they're so funny and great, he'll be like, he'll just fall in love with me. I didn't realize that actually they were quite bitter and not like fall in love with me. That wouldn't be the response. They'd be like, is she okay kind of response. But they hit a nerve with lots of girls. They really responded to them because they were about rejection, about unrequited love and not getting what you want. And I just kept going. And suddenly, because I was getting what I needed from this outlet, he became irrelevant very quickly because I was feeling fulfilled. So with comedy, it was an extension of that, really. And I started, I only speak honestly on stage about my life. I can only speak about very small things in the scale of the world, but like they're about relationships and love. And it's just so helpful because I can see clearly. So I'm doing a new show and it's about this breakup. I feel bad talking about him so much, but I've asked his permission. It's fine, and I feel like that's okay. I feel like I'm not being horrible about anybody. It's just I feel like I have to tell the story. But I've written it down, and it's like I can trace. Hopefully, I want to get better. This is the point of this show: is that I want to be okay by the end of it, and I want to show people that you can come out the other side of quite a difficult breakup and be okay and move on. I'm not there yet, but I'm hoping by the end of Edinburgh, I will be fine. So I'm using it.
You should do a follow-up podcast with you at the end of August and see whether or not any of this has worked.
But yeah, I feel like that's, I feel very lucky that I'm able to do that kind of thing.
Is this your first Fringe?
No,
of doing a show?
It will be my third show.
Okay. Is this the most personal show you've done?
Yes, this will be. Yeah.
What's quite interesting, having done personal shows. The Equal Marriage one wasn't as personal as I think I did another one, which was about depression. I found myself tremendously boring, Jessie. See, after you've talked about yourself and how I genuinely at one point, because it was about depression and all that stuff, at one point went, wow, 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 look at me, I'm so depressed. Because I was like, Jesus, listen to yourself, Calvin. Yeah. That in itself, the process of listening to your own, and I'm using the word whining, no one else's, whining night after night. Eventually, I was sick of myself.
Yeah.
Because when I could hear myself, I was like, it was such an interesting experience. As you say, to write it down and then say it, constantly say it. I really sickened myself.
But then it probably got you better. It stopped you whining after.
It did. Which is what I'm saying. It's like doing therapy every night without anyone. The only thing is no one challenges you. That's the only bad thing about confessional shows is the audience don't challenge you.
Yeah, they
necessarily.
Don't. No. Although I do find it funny because sometimes when you write something down and it's just so normal for you to say that kind of sentence yes. about your own personality and you just don't think it's necessarily funny, but you've written it down and then you do it and you get a big laugh mm-hmm. because it's so bizarre what you've said about yourself or how you feel about yourself. And you realise that laugh is because it is ridiculous. And yes. you realise you've just been, you've normalised how like unhealthy some of your, my behaviours are. Mm-hmm. By getting that big laugh, so I'm like, oh yeah, this is crazy. And it's like a mantra. I feel like if you do it night after every night, so I really want to feel empowered. I don't really like saying that word, but like I do want to feel empowered and not feel like I need a man to be okay. And that's kind of the point of the show. I want to be okay and enough on my own. I feel like if I say that every day, I will swallow it. Hopefully by the end and mm-hmm. I will be okay, but at the moment I'm not there. I'm a desperate, needy wreck of a human, but I'm hoping by just saying that line every day I'll mm-hmm. be okay.
As I get older, I desperately want to be kinder to myself. I desperately want to be nicer to myself and stop being so harsh on myself. And one of the things is actually accepting I'm needy. I'm desperately needy. And so self-help books often say things like, you shouldn't need someone else's love. You shouldn't need the affirmation of people. And it's bollocks.
It's
bollocks. Because actually you do. Yeah. And it's fine to need that. If I didn't need the affirmation of a group of strangers on a Friday night, I'd be telling jokes to my cats. I need that.
Yeah.
And I think it's fine to say I need that.
Yeah.
And when people really like what I do, it makes me feel better about myself.
Definitely.
And I think accepting what is perceived as a negative thing. So being needy is perceived as a negative thing because you should be able to stand up and just, I don't need anyone. But saying that you do need people as I've got older, it's fine to say that.
Mm-hmm.
I do need it.
Yeah.
I need someone to love me.
Yeah. And you need someone to be okay with being needed.
Yes.
Like, so it's fine to be needy. It's fine. I think it's not helpful to be needy when you're in love with someone who actively does not want a needy person.
Yes.
So that's what I'm trying to work out. Not that that's what happened to me, but I think I need to find somebody that is going to appreciate all of my awful things. But I don't know if I ever will. Maybe I never will. Maybe, I don't know.
Well, from my perspective, what I think is being a needy person myself is I met someone who I listened to. When they said, you've got to calm it a wee bit, Kalman. This is just, you know, you're being a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
That I went, okay, yes. I think it's getting to the stage. It's almost the same decision I made when I gave up smoking. People told me to give up smoking for years, but I had to be ready to actually give mm-hmm. up smoking myself. That I know my behaviours and I know I should change them. Because I can spot when I'm going, yeah, I'm being a real dick. I'm being an absolute twat at this precise moment in time. Mm. But that came far later on in life.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing I ever did, Jessie, was try and change myself for someone else.
Mm.
That was the worst thing I ever did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know who I am. I have tried to change myself. I do a lot of drawings about that too. Because unfortunately I have tried to change people I've been with, very, very subtly, you know, like a t-shirt here, mm-hmm. not drinking here, like, you know, don't eat that there. Like, and it's awful. And I just think, yeah, you have to be completely secure in yourself and all of your bad things and find somebody that you love those, all of their bad things too.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be independent, you know, happy people together and apart.
I did 4 years on my own, 4 years single with no one is what I did because I thought I need to, a series of destructive relationships. And I thought this is just not great. So I spent 4 years on my own learning to be okay by myself.
Mm.
But I mean, you've got kids.
This is the tricky thing, and I'm in a very difficult position because, it's quite difficult to move on when you've got two children together and absolutely. you still love the person. That's not ideal, is it?
It's not. It's not. I was speaking the other day with a comedian called Hannah Gadsby, shown Nanette. Don't know if you ever saw Nanette.
No, but I heard so many things about it.
It's quite an extraordinary and very personal show. I've seen Hannah's shows for years and years and years, and this is the most personal one, where she is brutally honest and sometimes not very funny about what she's saying. And it's strange because the show you're doing at the Fringe is classed as a comedy. It'll be in the comedy section, right? So when we're doing shows, we have to try and make them funny. Mm-hmm. That's essentially what it is. And sometimes I find myself being quite flippant about something that's actually very desperately sad because I know I'm trying to make people laugh.
Mm.
And it can be a positive and negative. But as you say, when you talk about a behaviour and people laugh and you go, shit, is it really that weird?
Yeah, yeah.
That's just what I do.
People do usually come up to me afterwards and they really do worry for me. Mm-hmm. And they don't think I'm okay, which I don't want to continue. I would like people to believe I'm okay. I also find it funny that so many people have asked me if I'm in therapy. People are like, oh no, whenever I'm saying something about a bad night, or some people are like, you know, well, just when you speak to your therapist, just tell her that you need to talk about this and this and this. And I'm like, well, I don't have a therapist. And they're like, what? I just look like I have therapy. I come across like I've been in therapy forever.
Let's stop you there and let's talk about this for a second, Jessie. Why aren't you in therapy?
Exactly.
Have you been in therapy?
Well, the problem is I feel like it's dating. I don't have time to date therapists because isn't it like you find the right one? I don't have time to date and find a therapist. I have to choose one.
Okay. So to you, the choice is between dating and therapy?
Yeah, I either have sex or I find a therapist.
I'm going to say therapy is more important, Jessie.
I would disagree.
I'm going to say therapy is more important. If I'm being honest with you, if you think that's your choice, you need to go to therapy.
Well, I'm just hoping someone does the legwork for me. So I've had a lot of people say, look, let me give you a really good therapist number. But no one's actually slided a little card with their number on. They don't want to give up their therapist. They want to share their good therapist.
My favourite scene in The Firm with Tom Cruise. The guy says, how much are you going to pay me? And he slides a piece of paper across the table. Yep.
Yeah, I want that.
I've always wanted to have a job where I do that.
Yeah.
Would you like to be on a panel show on television? How much? And just slide. I'll literally do it for nothing. Okay. I've been to therapy. You are correct. It is like dating. Mm-hmm. I've been to many therapists, some of whom were awful for me. And I finally found one. And it did take time to find someone who I felt I could talk to. And I went to
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
CBT therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy about changing behaviours. But I have been to some terrible therapists. Mm.
I did actually. I went to a terrible, terrible... that's mean, isn't it? She wasn't terrible. It's probably my memory. It was when I was 15. Something bad happened and I was sent to a therapist and it was not fun. And I think when you have an experience as a teenager, they're so heightened. You remember things so much more vividly from that age than anything. Well, for me. And so I have bad association with therapy.
Yep.
So I think that's probably the underlying thing. But again, I don't have time to address those big things because I have to pick them up from Stay and Play or write a show. I don't have time. But I do know that's vital. So I'm hoping this show will be therapy, and I'm hoping that after I have time to find a therapist with the money I earn from the show.
I, you know, it's a beautifully positive outlook. I'm going to do a show at the Fringe, the most stressful place on the planet for a comedian. Afterwards, I'm going to be solved, and I'll have made a lot of money, and I'll get myself a therapist.
Yep. So
I mean,
the goal.
I can't see any point where this is going to fail, Jessie. Yep.
I just want to get successful enough to be able to afford a therapist, a weekly therapist.
Here's a thing to unpack. Therapy doesn't always work for people. I think sometimes because they haven't found the right person to talk to. So it is my take on mental health is that no one can ever tell you what to do, because you have to find your own way through the icebergs. It helped me after a while when I found the right person. And I would always encourage people to go to therapy because they are trained to help with anxiety and depression. But it's like going to the gym. You have to find time for it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say your choices shouldn't be therapy or dating. I mean, I love it. I love it.
I live with my mum and my sister, which was really important. So after the breakup, I lived alone with the two babies in a very small flat for a year, and I did. It was very intense. And so then we decided we weren't going to get back together, so I moved in with my mum and my sister, and it was great because I suddenly had more time and more help, which was great. But so I ended up talking to my mum and my sister and using them mm-hmm. as the sounding boards and the therapist. They've got bored with me on the broken record of being like, oh, I'm heartbroken, so I feel like I am at a crunch point where I need to find different sounding boards, which I might need to pay for.
Or you could come and do a podcast
and
talk to a complete stranger about it for approximately 45 to 50 minutes.
Yeah, this is helping.
Is it helping?
I should pay you.
No, please don't. It's the BBC. I'm not allowed to accept it. I think a lot of people, it's more common than you might think that someone has had a first initial bad experience with therapy that has put them off.
Mm.
I'm exactly the same. I had a therapist when I was in my teenage years who actually probably gave me post-traumatic stress disorder from that experience.
Yeah.
And as a result, I didn't seek help for 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Because I was so terrified of it that I didn't then go to therapy for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very common. It's a big thing, therapy. How do you find the right person? You're trusting a person with a stranger with your most intimate thoughts.
Mm. I my cure is always work and doing and getting and I don't like kind of wallowing for too long. And I feel like if I just get up and do something, I'll feel better. And that's kind of, it's not really, it does work quite a lot of the time, but that's probably, so when I went to see this therapist and it wasn't helping, and we were just talking about the same thing over and over again, and she wanted to kind of unpick it, which I guess is a lot of therapy too, is really finding out what is the thing that happened and what the other things that are related to it. And I just felt like it was not practical. I felt like it was okay, well, I spent an hour. I could have gone and done something. I could have gone and got something from a shop, which would have made me feel better. Like, it's not practical. I use this time badly. And actually that relates to what I'm writing about now with, I feel like it's indulgent. I know guilt is heavily equated to motherhood, and people talk about guilt all the time. But like, I feel very, very guilty if I'm ever away from them for anything. So anytime I'm away from them, I feel like I have to be doing something worthy. Like, I'm either working or I'm having sex, like something I can't do when I'm with them. So like, I have to make that time, which has meant that dating has been very stressful because I've had to kind of compact a lot into kind of a couple of hours. Or working hard in a couple of hours. So I use time is always a worry for me.
I find it interesting that you think that it's indulgent to spend an hour talking about your own mental health.
I know, exactly. Yes, it's
because
very,
it's not indulgent.
No.
If you had popped your shoulder out and you went for an hour at a physiotherapist, that wouldn't be indulgent.
No, but I have a lot of injuries. I should be going to a physiotherapist.
Jessie, look, mate, we've only got 50 minutes. I don't know how much I can do for you.
I have an ongoing ankle injury.
Right.
A shoulder injury I've had since 15.
Okay, and do you get them?
No, just live with them.
Okay, so what I'm getting, What I'm getting, Jessie, is that you're a woman who doesn't necessarily spend the time that she perhaps should on herself, whether it be physical or mental, anything.
No, I think that's because of my mum. My mum is like one of the best women ever. But I'm one of five children, and my mum has never had any time for herself. So I feel like I need to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think part of my getting better will be making my mum have more time for herself. So I'm trying to be like, you're going swimming today and you're going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to make her have more time for herself, which might make me have more time for myself.
So my parents are war babies. Mm-hmm. Grew up after the Second World War. At that point, what do you mean you're upset about something? People died in the war. Get on with it.
Yeah.
In a nice way. My parents are beautiful. They're lovely people. There's no question. They're gorgeous. Now, so I grew up in a household of, what's your problem? You work hard, you don't drink very much because then that gets in the way of work and you get on with it. Mm-hmm. And it took a long time for me to say, that's fine, but I am not that person. Mm-hmm. I am a needy, self-indulgent person and I need to talk about it and I need to help sort myself out. Now, I went to CBT for a while. To try and solve the anxiety and paranoia issues mostly of why didn't I get that? Everyone hates me. I'm never going to be successful. Everyone's laughing at me, mm-hmm. essentially, to try and change those behaviours with empirical evidence. That's mm-hmm. what we use. So I'll be crying in the living room and my wife will come in and I'll say, everyone hates me. What's the empirical evidence? I saw a Facebook post.
Yeah.
Which has set me off.
Yeah.
Do you find, I mean, social media is a difficult thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily strangers calling me fat, but the people in my own world.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, because everybody is, even if they're doing posts about, oh, I'm bad today, oh, look at me, here's a beautiful photo of me looking bad. It's just not real. It's not real. And it doesn't usually make anyone feel better. So my tactics with it are to post and then run away. Don't look. Don't stay on it for too long. Just do what you need to do and get away. That doesn't work. And then with it, I could talk for a long time about the traps I've fallen into with insecurity and looking at random people's posts and then suddenly thinking, oh, this person is like with my ex-boyfriend, thinking that he's, you know, he's married to her secretly and I just don't know, and like awful things. So I think the only, but it has also helped me, like it really has. It's like absolutely enabled me to have a career. Mm-hmm. I feel better sometimes when people write nice things like, oh, I relate to that doodle, or I came to your show, I liked it. Like, it does make me feel better. So I embrace it, and I also am wary of it. And I try and be as honest as possible because I don't want to feed into this toxic pool of lies, which it is. And so I do try and portray a real self on my profile so that I don't make anyone ever feel like anxious about what I'm posting. That doesn't mean that I don't, you know, I'm judging anyone else by the way they post, but mm-hmm. I do think, I feel like honesty is always the best policy.
Mm-hmm. When you're writing your shows, because we've talked, it's meant to be funny. Sometimes I would say things because I knew I was going to get a reaction from an audience. Not a shocking reaction from the audience, but you when you're doing a show about mental health issues, anxiety, whatever it is, people sit, they know, yes, they're like that, yeah. Right, okay, what's going to happen,
yeah.
And it's quite fun to play with that sometimes, mm-hmm. It is quite fun to play with it, because yeah. How honest are you, and how much do you play with that, how much fun do you have with your own anxiety? Because it can be fun. We can have fun,
yeah,
with it.
Oh, I'm loving it at the moment because it's just such a release to say some of these stories about just things that have happened that have sent me crazy. And to be able to say the story and for people to enjoy it and respond with like even just a like just hear them intake of air, but like
a gasp from the audience is a delightful thing.
Oh, it's so lovely.
Yeah.
So like I'm loving that, and it's like I feel like I don't know how good I am, and I don't mind if I'm not good. I want to be good, obviously, mm-hmm. but why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I want to share something, and it's nice when people turn up and appreciate it, but I wouldn't do it just on my own, I guess, on a stage. But people acknowledging that this happened, and it's actually quite funny. I think when something happens and it's awful and it's sad and it's also quite funny, I need to write about it, and I need to say, I didn't say that clearly at all, but basically I feel there's a point to saying this stuff on stage, the real stuff. I feel like there is a reason to share it.
Do you think in a way, I'm not saying it normalizes madness, and madness is a term I'm using as a generic term for sometimes what's in my head doesn't feel normal, but then when I say it out loud and people laugh, it feels less dangerous.
Yeah.
So my own head feels less dangerous when I say it and then people laugh.
Yeah.
So it makes me feel safer in my own head.
Yeah, I can see that, because it's almost like slightly addictive when you get a response and you're like maybe living to have another story where you're going to be able to share it and people are going to gasp.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm not that mental.
You'll get there, Jessie.
I will get that.
I am the poster girl for insane comedy. One day, hopefully one day you'll be 43 and still on stage whining about yourself. I find it fun.
Mm-hmm.
I embraced my anxiety and depression. I think it makes me a better person.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes me a more caring person, a more empathetic person. I think it makes me better as a person.
And people love you for it and will see themselves in you. It's not a selfish thing,
no,
what you're doing. It's like you're making people feel better about their own things.
Mm.
And they've come out to see that and feel better. And I think that's great.
I think if I had... It was such a shameful thing, mental health issues. It really was.
Mm.
When I was growing up, as I say, not necessarily in terms of the family, but in terms of generally... Very much a stiff upper lip, get on with it, all this kind of stuff. And I think the more people talk about it and the more shows are done about it and the more... The thing is, after you do your show at the Fringe, people will go to the bar and talk about it. And undoubtedly, people will share things that they've never shared before with each other. And surely that's a good thing.
Oh, it's so nice. Every show I do, I have people come up to me afterwards and be like, oh my God, I did that and I did something like that, and can I just tell you? And they tell me something like, really? Like... incredibly, like, brutally honest stories, and I'm always just I do like the thought of prodding that honesty out of people. I like that, because I feel like we'll all be better if we're all more honest about what we do when we're at home and we're anxious and we're on our own and we're on our phones and we have mm-hmm. this time to go into our dark place, and we share it with each other. It's nice.
Here's a question. I don't know what your answer is going to be, because I've never asked you it before. Mm-hmm. That's why it's a question. You're one of five children?
Yeah.
I'm one of three, youngest, best. My brother and sister, whilst they may be anxious, are not like me. Are any of your siblings like that? I constantly think about genetics and why I've ended up like this.
Because
I've been as depressed as long as I can remember. Why am I like this and my brother and sister aren't like this? And no one else in my family really is like this.
School.
Yes, that is exactly why, Jessie. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah.
School. Because even if you're at the same... I really believe this, because all five of us went to the same school. Mm-hmm. And each year is completely different. You've got 30 different... however many kids in your year group. And my older brother, Mr. Popular, big guy on campus, he had a good set of friends from day one. And he's still got those friends. And I had like, everyone in my year was horrible. I had no friends. It was awful. Whereas my younger two brothers one of my brothers had a difficult year, group two. I feel like it's completely based on primary school. Also, I moved schools a lot. We moved schools like a couple of times. I feel like it's just disastrous if you've given a bad luck with your peer group.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of I didn't connect to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas my brothers and sisters did, maybe. more than me.
I don't have particularly happy memories of my school days, and undoubtedly so much of my anxiety, my lack of confidence, all of this comes from school days, not being popular. Now, I've spoken to people I was at school with subsequent, and they don't have the same memory I do.
Mm.
And I don't think that matters, because your own memories are true to yourself. But undoubtedly, I think a lot of it comes from school.
Definitely.
And feeling isolated and lonely, just desperately lonely at school.
Yeah, but that's interesting what you said about the people you've spoken to not having the same memory, because I feel like with a lot of performers, even if you didn't know you were going to be a performer yet, I think people would say the same thing about me at school. I would say, oh, it was awful. I hated school. Like, oh, no one liked me. I was such a loner. And I was. Whereas I've been around friends who I was at school with, and I'm like, no, you were really popular. Like, everyone really liked you. What are you talking about? And I'd be like, well, no, because I think that's innately, you don't feel like you're part of the pack. And so you want to try and perform for the pack and dance around them, and then, but you don't ever feel included. And so that's your residual memory of being
I've
like...
I've never felt like... my entire life has been attempting to be the cool kid at school. That's really all my life is.
Yeah.
And even at the fringe, I want to be the cool kid in comedy. And I've never been the cool kid in comedy. I've never... People like my shows and they come and see my shows, and that's great. But part of me wants to be in a basement in a disused castle doing a really arty show about, you know, stuff and things like that. And I'm not, and I've never felt like the cool kid, and that's from school, that actually a lot of my lack of self-confidence comes from those days. Mm. Whether or not they are true, in inverted commas, they're my truth of how I felt at that point. And comedy is one place where misfits, eccentrics and weirdos can still exist.
And then all compete.
And compete to be the cool kid at school. But what I like is, though, we're all a bit strange. I feel it's more of a level playing field, in that the prettiest girl doesn't always go to the prom in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's the
prettiest
weirdest.
Girls not welcome.
No, we don't like them. We like the weirdos and the strange people.
Yeah, yeah. It's
and that's
great.
Why comedy is a much more inclusive, lovely place for people like us.
But then you would feel like insecure in the comedy world about not being the coolest or the best or whatever. But then the difference is, as opposed to school, you would then go and speak to a comedian. Another comedian and say, oh, I'm feeling really anxious, and they'll be like, me too, let's talk about it.
So, I've never, it's okay, people always say to me, is there truth? Okay, so I'll tell you this. Okay, so I was backstage at a comedy club once, and there was a new comedian. I wasn't even going that long, but I felt like an old hack anyway. And she came in and she went, oh, I'm just really worried about tonight because my set's about my mental health issues. And I was like, sweetheart, if that's your hook, I hate to break it to you, but we're all mad. If you think that having a mental health problem in comedy will make you stand out, you've picked the wrong thing. Being normal and sane would make you seem like a freak in comedy. But if you go to the fringe, almost everybody's shows us what we truly are, which is why I love comedians.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and see, you know, Felicity's lovely show about needing to go to the toilet all the time. I love that kind of stuff. But even when you go and see Angela Barnes's show, you go to see Sophie Willen's show, whatever it is, there's always something slightly wrong with us. But performing enables us to embrace that.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. You can stand on stage at the fringe telling a story about a breakup and behaving in an awkward way. And it's what you are.
Mm.
I think you can show people what you are.
Yeah, it's really great that we have this, I feel like it will all be okay.
It will be okay. It will be okay. At times things aren't okay. I hate flying. Passionately hate flying, and before I have to fly, I stand at the airport and think. I will know at 10 p.m. I will stand in my garden and it will all be fine.
Mm. Yeah.
And I know it will be fine.
Yeah. I've heard, I'm friends with Simon Amstel.
Yes.
And he was going on to do a massive, massive gig somewhere. And I was like, are you not nervous? Like, that's just so many people. What if you're not very good? What if you're not very good? And he was like, no, I just close my eyes before I go on stage. And I just imagine myself doing a brilliant gig and everybody loving me. And I feel happy. And then I come off stage and it's all fine. I just imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
and it's all okay. Mm-hmm. I think that's a nice way to think about going on to do a gig. Mm-hmm. Like, go on optimistic that it's going to be good. That, I mean, I've never done that.
I've never done that in my life before.
But I would like to try.
I don't know what it'd be like to be optimistic about a gig before I start.
Yeah.
I think I would lose my...
Yeah, you need that.
That kind of being like a ninja waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah.
Before we finish, Jesse, I'm going to talk to you after the Fringe. I want you to know that. Not for this podcast, but I'm going to find out if you're okay after the Fringe. Because, and I want to know whether this works for you.
Okay. Good.
Okay. And I hope it does. And I would like to help you find a therapist.
Thank you.
I don't know any in London. I don't live here. But I'm going to try and find you a therapist. If you think that would work for you, I'm not pressuring you in your mental health. Okay. People are listening to this podcast, I think, lots of different people. People who just listen to BBC podcasts, people who find it because it says depression or anxiety or whatever. I love podcasts. You found your love podcast.
Just found them.
They're such an intimate thing. They are... People are listening to this in their headphones or whatever, and they're listening to us having a conversation with them. And I like to say to people, as we've just said, if you are in a position where you're feeling anxious or depressed, it will get better. You may have to do something about it, but it will get better. As someone who has anxiety issues, is there anything that you would like to tell the people who are listening to this podcast, positive or negative? I make no claims that this is a positive podcast.
Okay. Well, I think the thing that's helped me lately is when I'm in a downward spiral of waiting for a text and thinking I'm going to go insane and just feeling just so crushed with silence. I think that I've just forced myself to turn off my phone and to not look at it multiple times in the night, and not I hide it in a place that I know I won't be bothered to try and find in my sleep and in the dark. And sure enough, every morning that I've done that, the morning after, I've felt better, because mm-hmm. sleep and time does make everything better. Everything is usually a bit better in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to do that more and more now. Just have faith that it's gonna feel less difficult if you just leave it for a few hours. So it's not a very happy note to end on, but I'm just basically saying turn off your phone, hide it,
mm-hmm. and get some sleep.
Put it on vibrate though, because you don't want to lose it and then ring it and then think, oh my god, I lost my phone.
I would like for you, Jesse, to have a magnificent Fringe.
Thank you.
But I would also like for you to know that it's not an indulgence to go to either a therapist or a physiotherapist to sort out your long-term physical injuries, which you appear to have, that it is not an indulgence, that your children will be absolutely fine mm-hmm. with you taking some time for yourself.
Yeah.
I would like that if there's a gift to be deposited upon you, it is to not think it's an indulgence to take care of yourself, to give yourself time to take care of yourself.
I will. Just need to find a good one.
You do need to find a good one. After this podcast, no doubt you will be tweeted by people saying they're good psychiatrists or therapists. Don't necessarily trust them, Jesse. Okay. If someone tweets you and says, I'm a good
come
therapist.
Come meet me at a park.
I wouldn't necessarily do that. But I think the best thing I've ever done is to say, I am allowed to have an hour a week where I work on my head. Mm-hmm. Because it will benefit everybody.
Yeah.
It will benefit everybody.
Yeah. And my mum and sister can have a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll do is we'll periodically check in with each other on a podcast basis to see how you're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can I come and see your show at the Fringe?
Please, yeah.
We might not broadcast this, but where are you on?
I'm on in a tiny, tiny room at the Stand.
Oh, the Stand?
Yeah.
Right.
Stand 4, I think.
That's where I did my very first show, Jessie. 12:15 in the afternoon.
Really?
12:15 in the afternoon. It was called Maybe It Is Your Fault.
That's a great
12:15 in the afternoon. The poster was me, like Uma Thurman from Kill Bill. And that was my first ever year at the Fringe.
Really?
My first solo show was at Stand 4.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so great to know.
And do you know, it's because they have lights and a stage now. They didn't when I did it.
Really?
The first
Isn't it
year,
like a library or something?
It's basically quite a large cupboard.
Yeah.
it's grand though. What time are you on it?
2:30.
Perfect.
Yeah. No, I'm really like little rooms. So
I might have to do you know what? It might be quite stressful for me to go back into that room though, because I haven't been back in that room since 2006.
Wow.
2006 maybe.
Wow.
Was when I did my first show there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow,
oh my God.
Yeah.
And then afterwards we can talk about our anxiety.
Yeah.
What a great day out in Edinburgh.
Thank you.
Jessie.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, darling.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you download your podcast from, and then you'll automatically get next week's episode. Next week, I'll be talking to Felicity Ward.
I'm surprised at how many very happy, depressed people I know. I was writing about this the other day, and like the people that go, the people that are shocked at other people. Look, well, let's just go straight into suicide. You know, when someone suicides and they're like, but he was so happy, but she was so happy. It's like, yeah, no one wants to hang around a sad person. Like, we learn tools so that you want to be near us.
If you like the show, do leave us a review, as that will help other people find it too. And if you want to get in touch, then you can email mrsbrightside@bbc.co.uk. And finally, we know this podcast talks about things that might have affected you or someone you know personally. If that's the case and you'd like some further info, head to the Mrs. Brightside page on the BBC website and we'll put up some links to places you might find useful. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Kalman out.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.